You're tuned to Perspectives. This is the Book Club, and joining us today is New York Times bestselling author Craig Johnson. Craig is the author of, if you haven't been out of the country or not in this world, you probably are aware of Longmire. It's the Netflix original series, and it's based on the novels written by Craig Johnson. Craig, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure. Certainly since the last book actually started and has a lot of scenes that take place right there in El Paso, as a matter of fact.
That is correct. And I'm glad you mentioned that because I wanted to bring up some situations about Depth of Winter, which was the previous book. But first of all, before we talk about some of these novels, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up? And were you always interested in reading?
Oh, yeah, always interested in reading. Like, and I came from a family of storytellers. I just happened to be the worst one. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, if I can't tell them, maybe I could write them down. Like, and so I had this idea that maybe I'd want to be a writer like that. But, you know, wanting to be a writer is kind of like wanting to be an astronaut. The odds against you are so great, you might as well just shut up, not tell anybody. And then if you do succeed, well, it was a miracle. It happened overnight. And I was extraordinarily fortunate, like, that I came up with this idea of, like, you know, the sheriff of the least populated county in the least populated state, Wyoming, where we only have about 500,000 people. And I thought, you know, maybe it would be a little bit different kind of crime fiction, you know, where you were kind of forced to deal more, you know, with character and place, which are the things that, you know, have always been more interest to me. And then, you know, well, I, you know, built my own ranch there at Ucross, Wyoming, population 25, like that, and finally got my life pretty much under control and thought, okay, you've had this novel that you've had in the back of your head that you've always wanted to write. And lo and behold, you know, Walt Longmire was born. And I wrote the first novel in the Longmire series, The Cold Dish, and it came out in 05. Like it, and I've written one a year ever since, along with two novellas and a collection of short stories.
Now, as far as Walt Longmire, as you mentioned, he is the sheriff. He's a character, the lead character in your books in this series that we'll talk a little bit about in just a minute. However, in addition to Walt, you have a lot of interesting characters in your books.
Well, thank you. I think that, you know, anytime you're writing a book, you kind of have to approach it the same way that a conductor would approach a choral group. You know, I mean, you've got all of these different voices that are all there, you know, for very specific reasons, like at, to help you tell a story. And, you know, you have to select those voices, you know, very carefully like that. And, you know, the ensemble is, you know, trying to be, you know, fair and representative, like, you know, of society and the culture as a whole. And, you know, the ensemble of characters that follows Walt around, you know, they're sometimes very counterpoint to his voice like that, which is the voice of the book. Since they're written in first person, you're kind of like in Walt's head, you know, for 350-some pages. But Victoria Moretti, who is Walt's undersheriff, is a Philadelphia transplant, an Easterner, like that. And, you know, she's got some very different perspectives on things. But sometimes, you know, you kind of need that. You know, the West is the West, like that. But the West in the eyes of someone who's from the East, you know, sometimes, you know, a little bit more explanatory, like that. And then another character is Henry Standing Bear, like that, who is based off of a good friend of mine, Marcus Red Thunder, from up on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. And, you know, that's another perspective that I think, you know, you have to give credence to, like that, to leave the natives out of your books of a Western novel, even a contemporary Western novel would be, excuse the term, you know, criminal. And then there's Ruby, who is the dispatcher, you know, for Walt, who kind of keeps things all running, and Santiago Cesar Batoria, the Basque deputy, who's kind of a prominent character in this particular book simply because he speaks Basque and kind of provides Walt a conduit, you know, into a somewhat insular, you know, kind of society there in Wyoming. I could go on and on and on like that, but that's part of the joy of writing a series of books, is to have that kind of an ensemble, you know, to draw from, where you can have these characters. There's always a kind of an ebb and a flow, you know, where some of the characters, you know, are very strong in one storyline because they need to be, and then others, you know, kind of take a backseat, you know, in other novels. And, you know, those are the two emails that I get after every book comes out. One says that, you know, you need to take it easy on Walt because you beat him up too much in the last book, you know, which is kind of gratifying because evidently the readers think that he's very real. And then the other one, which is, you know, there was not enough of my favorite character, insert name here. You know, whether it be Vic Moretti or, you know, Henry Standing Bear, like that, or, you know, Lucian Conley, or even the dog, you know, that Walt has.
You mentioned the fact that he was pretty beat up in the previous novel, and that's Depth of Winter, where his daughter is kidnapped by a Mexican cartel, and so you have to go into Mexico. But as you mentioned at the beginning of the interview, a lot of the book, you know, from that book, Depth of Winter, was involving here in the Southwest, and it turns out that you hired a coyote to do the reverse of what they're used to doing.
I did. I had, you know, been over in Mexico numerous times, like it, and I actually, you know, I love El Paso, like it's one of my favorite Texas cities, like it, and been there numerous times, like it, but it had been a while, you know, since, you know, I'd been down that way, like it, being involved, you know, with the building the ranch, like it, and running the ranch, like it, and then the books and all of that. And so I knew I wanted to go back, you know, into Juarez, like it, and down, you know, into the you know, further on, like into more rural areas, you know, south of Juarez, like it. And I knew that was, you know, a little bit of a dicey proposition in some, you know, some situations. And so I thought it might be best, you know, to actually have somebody who, you know, would be knowledgeable, you know, of the area now, you know, in comparative, you know, to the knowledge that I had of the area from almost 20 years ago. And that landscape has changed, you know, a great deal, as you'd know, you know, even better than I do. And so I hired this guy, like, to take me across the border, like, and take me into some of those areas, like, and, you know, it got a little exciting in some times, like that. But I think it was indispensable, you know, in being able to describe the landscape, which is such an important part, I think, of, you know, any kind of a book that takes place in the American West. The American West is not one homogenous, you know, kind of topography. It's very, very different. You know, from any square mile to any given square mile. And, you know, to really capture the essence of that, you know, and have Walt be a part of that geography, like, I really kind of had to go visit, you know, and spend some time there.
And you even asked, I'm not sure if asked is the correct word, but convince your wife to get on a mule in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, coerce might be the term we want to use.
Like, there you go.
That was a situation where, you know, I knew that there was going to be a sequence in the book, you know, where Walt was going to be, you know, riding a mule. And, you know, I'd done a lot of work on horseback like that, but not spent a lot of time with mules like that. And so I had never been to the Grand Canyon, for goodness sake, like that. And so, you know, I decided, you know, I was going to, you know, double down like that, you know, and kill two birds with one stone like that, you know, and have a mule adventure. I discovered that they had these mule trips that went all the way down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and all the way back up. And I thought, well, this would be a great way for me to have the same experience as Walt like that. And also, you know, be able to see the Grand Canyon in a way that, you know, maybe, you know, a lot of people don't ever get to see it. The thing that I neglected to take into consideration was that there was a weight limit on the mules. So after I had signed my wife and I up to do this, I discovered that the weight limit on the mules was 200 pounds. Well, I haven't weighed 200 pounds since high school, like it, and so I had to go on a crash diet, like it, to be able to make the mules. And I'm proud to say that I actually made it, like it, and that was including all of my clothes, like it, that I was wearing, and my hat and boots, like it, and so it was a kind of a dire situation, like that. But I did make it, you know, sacrificing for my art.
So you had to quit eating burritos to get on the burrito.
Exactly. It was kind of like, you know, slim pickings there for a while, I got to admit.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Craig Johnson. His latest novel is Land of Wolves. In this, you mentioned that you wanted to experience what Walt felt as you were writing about this. And some people have actually said that you identify with Walt very much and that you are Walt.
Oh, I don't know. My wife probably has the best statement about that. You know, she says that Walt Longmire is who Craig would like to be in 10 years. It's just off to an incredibly slow start. You know, there are a lot of things about Walt that I aspire to. I think he has a nobility. I think he has a patience. He has a tenacity. And a curiosity, you know, I think probably the curiosity we share like that, but I don't know, Walt also has a sadness, you know, to him, you know, with the death of his wife, and the difficulties that he's had in his life, like in the questions that he poses to himself about whether it is he's doing what it is that he should be doing with his life, like at, or his relationship, you know, with his daughter and granddaughter and all of these things. I mean, they all have a large-scale effect, you know, on who he is. And I've been fortunate enough that I haven't had the tragedies in my life that Walt has had. And so I do have a little bit of an advantage there. But I aspire to an awful lot of the things that Walt, you know, kind of emulate. I'd like to emulate a lot of those things, you know, as time goes by. I'll let you know in 10 years how I did.
That's when we'll get the box set, right?
That's right. That's right.
So, as I mentioned, Depth of Winter was your previous book. This one is Land of Wolves. And after that trip to Mexico, you are back in Wyoming, at least Walt Longmire is. And the situation is that there is a shepherd, Miguel Hernandez, whose body is found. And some people claim, well, he was hanged or he committed suicide. But that's where you come in as the sheriff, and you start investigating. And one of the characters that we hear about in the beginning also is 77M, and that is a wolf. I don't know if you want to call him a renegade wolf, but it's one of the top wolves, like the wolf. And some people are wondering, well, perhaps the wolf got to Miguel because, as you describe in your book, even though he's hanging, you also find that the flesh has been removed from his feet.
Yeah, he's been nibbled on, like that. And so the question becomes, you know, well, who did the nibbling? Like that. And, you know, we have probably the largest, you know, wolf population, you know, in the lower 48, like in Wyoming, the reintroduction of, like, the Arctic wolves that they brought in from Canada and reintroducing them in the 90s. And, you know, it's a pretty large wolf population that's there, like that. And every once in a while, as is the habit, you know, with, you know, the pack mentality that they have, you know, every once in a while, one of the wolves will be run off, like that, and chased off, you know, from the pack. And the Bighorn Mountains are an entire basin away from Yellowstone, like that. And so it's very difficult for the wolves to make it, you know, that far, you know, in an agro-based society like that, you know, with all of the ranches, you know, and human interaction that they would come across. But every once in a while, you know, we have a wolf sighting, you know, up in the Bighorn Mountains. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's fun for me, like, to deal with some of these hot topic issues of the American West, you know, whether it be, you know, questions like immigration or whether it be, you know, the wolf situation or those type of things like that. But I think that a lot of that has to do with trying to make sure that Walt is dealing with the issues that, you know, that Western sheriffs deal with. You know, I don't ever want to write a book where Walt is, you know, on a cruise ship or Walt is learning how to ride a surfboard or whatever. I mean, I want Walt dealing with the things that Western sheriffs deal with. And, you know, the majority of the books tend to come from newspaper articles. And this one was no different. You know, there's actually a part of the Game and Fish portion of the Wyoming government like that deals with a large predator response team that goes into, you know, communities where, you know, whether mountain lions or, you know, grizzly bears like that, or, you know, wolves or something sometimes make an appearance or have an impact, you know, on these ranches and domestic livestock. And, you know, that's things that, you know, Wyoming sheriffs deal with. And so it seemed apparent that this would be something that Walt would have to deal with. Then, of course, you know, the title of the book, Land of Wolves, comes from the old Basque proverb that a land of strangers is a land of wolves. And, you know, not only is this, you know, wolf something of a stranger in a strange land, but after Walt's experiences in Mexico, he finds himself being something of a stranger in a strange land, and even worse than that, almost a stranger to himself. You know, whenever he gets ready to go down into Mexico for Depth of Winter, you know, he's advised by Henry, Standing Bear, that, you know, he needs to, you know, go back and find that individual, that soldier that he was in Vietnam, because what he's basically going into there south of Juarez is not going to be a police action. It's going to be a war. And to survive that, he needs to dredge up that individual that he was, and he does, and he, you know, he survives, you know, through the skin of his teeth, like it, and makes it back to Wyoming, but only to be confronted by that individual once again who is not so ready to go into that dark night and be packed away back in that footlocker, So he's something of a stranger to himself and a stranger in a strange land. And so it's kind of a book of strangers in many ways.
It's interesting what you just mentioned about he's wondering whether or not he can carry on, or perhaps it's been his time now. And in the book, there's a quote: "You've been shot, stabbed, punched, run over, kicked, and generally abused in every way. And it's only now it's gotten to you."
Exactly. And of course, that's Vic Moretti, like that, who is a very unique insight to Walt, like that. But yeah, it's a situation where he starts having these, you know, these phases where he kind of freezes up a little bit. And it's actually a psychological phenomenon like that that's, you know, kind of pertains to the fight or flee mechanism, like that, that you know, our nervous systems, you know, give us to try and survive, you know, incredible situations like that. And, you know, you either assess a, you know, a confrontation and think to yourself, okay, you know, I'm going to have to fight my way out of this. Or, you know, perhaps you think, okay, I can't fight my way out of this, so I'll run. But there is a third option which happens, which is a freeze. And that freeze happens whenever you're confronted with something that you don't think you can overcome by either of the previous, by fighting or fleeing, and you just absolutely freeze up. And it's an interesting conversation between Walt and the doctor, you know, Isaac Bloomfield, you know, over at the hospital there, you know, at in Absaroka County, where he says, you know, okay, I understand the phenomenon, Doc, but what in the world is it that I'm afraid of? And what is it that's scaring me so badly? And Isaac Bloomfield looks at Walt and says, why, Walt, I would have thought it was manifestly obvious. It's yourself.
Wow. We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author Craig Johnson. He is the author of the latest novel, Land of Wolves. When you talked about wolf sightings earlier in our interview and our conversation, in the book there's a passage also where you describe what it's like to see a wolf, and it's beautiful, actually.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I think that, you know, we anytime, you know, you're dealing with any kind of, you know, of you know, a natural, you know, world response, these are things that have been covered, you know, in numerous books and numerous elements like that. And, you know, I think the trick there is to not fall prey, you know, to the stereotypes and the cliches and that type of thing, but to try and actually think about, you know, what your response is, or what this animal's natural response is. Look at, and I've been fortunate enough that I've actually, you know, stumbled upon, you know, wolves in the wild. And honestly, you know, I tried to give, you know, to convey, you know, the honest response that I could in that. And it really is a kind of an empathic, you know, kind of response that they have. I mean, they're looking at you and they're reading your mind. They're trying to see what it is you're thinking and what you're doing. They're not looking to attack you. They're not looking to run like that, but they will run if they have to, like it. And I would assume that they would fight if they have to, like that. But they're happening to be empathic because they now live in our world. You know, as apex predators go, you know, boy, it's really kind of hard to find one that's more apex than human beings. You know, we've turned out to be the top predator species, you know, on the planet. And there was a time, you know, when we were in conflict, you know, and maybe more in competition, you know, with these animals. But now it's a time period where, you know, now we're kind of the top. Look at, and now the question becomes, you know, well, how are they going to survive in our world? And you can't help but, you know, see that empathy, you know, that they're trying to read our minds, trying to see what we're doing and how we're going to react, just to survive, just to find some way to live.
In the book, Land of Wolves, the shepherd, who is found dead, Miguel Hernandez, sometimes as a reader, perhaps I did it myself, automatically think this is an immigrant, it's a Mexican young man. But as it turns out, he's not from Mexico at all.
No, he's Chilean, like that, and something of a political dissident, you know, which, and an expat, like that, which complicates matters, you know, to an extent. I mean, if this was a simple situation, you know, of an itinerant, you know, agricultural worker, like that, who, you know, just, you know, went nuts, like that, you know, and hung himself, like that, well, that would be a pretty cut and dry case, like that. But this individual is, you know, extraordinarily intelligent, extraordinarily well read, and invested, you know, in his fellow human beings, like at not only his fellow human beings back in his home country, but also the fellow human beings of the family that he's working for, the ranch that he's working for, you know, all of these things. And that's, you know, that's part of the stock and trade, I think, of, you know, trying to, you know, write a mystery novel that works on as many layers as it possibly can. You know, you want all of those minor characters, even the characters that you meet that are already dead, you know, by the time you start the book. You know, you want that to be a fully fledged, you know, fully informed, fully fleshed out character that will draw, you know, the reader in. I mean, you really kind of have to care about the victims, you know, before, you know, you can, you know, draw a reading audience in. If they don't care about this individual that's dead, if they don't care about this man who is, like, you know, pretty much, you know, the pivotal point of this entire investigation, well, then you've kind of failed as a writer. And I think I'm firmly of the belief that, you know, Steinbeck used to say you should be able to take any given, you know, minor support character in your novel and turn around and write another entire novel about them. And I'm firmly of that belief myself.
You just kind of led me into this next question when you mentioned Steinbeck, because one of the things I was going to ask you next is the fact that you and Walt Longmire are avid readers, and both of you are quick to sometimes quote a passage from a book.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, Walt is pretty much haunted, you know, by literature. I mean, he was, you know, an English major, you know, at USC in the 1960s, before he lost his deferment, you know, and got shipped off to Vietnam like that and became a marine investigator, where his life kind of, you know, took a turn. I mean, his office is an old abandoned Carnegie Library, you know, back behind the City Hall. He's never, you know, anywhere, you know, without a book. He always has a book with him somewhere, you know, a stack of books sometimes with him like that. And only those of us who, you know, who read know what kind of an advantage that is, especially in a society where reading, you know, seems to have lost, you know, some of its vibrance, you know, for an awful lot of the populace. You know, reading is just so magnificent. Like, it's such a wonderful thing, you know, simply because it uses, you know, the one tool that an awful lot of other forms of entertainment or, you know, or edification seem to lack. You know, it exercises that imagination. And imagination is such an important part of what it is that I do. I mean, I'm a wordsmith, and what I do is I stack up the words like dominoes, and line them all up, and then hopefully use the right word. Not too many, not too few, but hopefully the right word that will trigger the reader's imagination. And then they do all my work for me. They imagine this world. You know, they imagine these characters. They populate it and assemble it, you know, exactly the way that they want to see it. And it's custom fit, you know, to what their mind wants to see. And that's where, you know, it's very difficult for Hollywood or any other form of entertainment, you know, to compete with a book. You know, books are just a powerful thing. And that's one of the abilities that Walt has, the ability to read. And he loves to read, and he retains all of that information. And I think it makes him a better, you know, riding partner. You know, if you're riding along, you know, behind, you know, 250 head of cattle like that, you know, it's a lot easier to do that with somebody who can tell a story, or, you know, someone who has an anecdote like that, or something that they can draw from to, you know, to make those connections in what it is that's happening in your life right now. It's a wonderful thing to have.
Was it difficult, Craig, when you were approached about putting Longmire on the TV screen?
You know, it really wasn't. I kind of went into this, you know, with my eyes open and, you know, aware, you know, that there were going to be differences, you know, between a TV show and a series of books. And I was fortunate enough that I had a really wonderful group of people as the producers and, you know, directors and writers and actors like that. And, you know, we kind of became fast friends with all of them very quickly. And, you know, it's actually become, you know, one of the joys of my life. Like, all of these people, you know, the actors show up for Longmire Days in our little town of Buffalo, Wyoming, every year for this big festival that we have, where they show up, all the actors from the TV show and about 20,000 of their closest friends. And, you know, it kind of continues on like that. I mean, the show's kind of been in hiatus now for about 2 years. With all six seasons, you know, still streaming, you know, on Netflix and trending, here just the other day, like that in one of the, I think, one of the top 15 shows that they've produced. And, you know, it's wonderful that it continues to have the life that it has. And even though they may be like two separate but equal universes, you know, they kind of complement each other. And my experiences with Hollywood have actually been pretty great.
So, Craig, tell us a little bit about if people want to find out more about yourself, about what we need to do. Is there a website that you would direct them to?
Oh, yeah, like at my own website, which is craigallenjohnson.com, CraigAllenJohnson.com. And then, you know, we're on Facebook and Instagram and, you know, and always in the bookstores, like at Always in the Bookstores.
Craig, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Louie. My pleasure. Always good to be here.
We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author Craig Johnson. The latest novel is Land of Wolves. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Chris Williams. Our producer is Dee Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.